I just want to correct one impression that Gwen may have given you right away. Some of you know there are 25 members of our firm, and we don't all live together. We talked a lot this week about the credibility of some of the techniques that we use, about the credibility of the clients and employers that we serve. I want to talk a little bit about earning some credibility for ourselves as individual practitioners and as a profession which is organized. Because it seems to me that that's what we are about, is bringing us together in an organized fashion to be able to serve as full-fledged professionals. Now, I'm not much of a stand-up comedian, but I want to sort of organize this, if I can, around the three classic jokes about public relations. Now, the reason I'm doing this is because Ralph Breedy told that story the other day. I asked him to. And I had a couple of stories he hasn't heard before, so I'm fulfilling two obligations. So I'm saying that I know you understand that. The classic PR joke has to be the one about motions. Everybody's heard this joke 1,000 times, but I just want to tell it again, not expecting you even to laugh, but rather call your attention to some of the aspects of it. You know how it goes. Moses was leading the children of Israel out of Egypt to the promised land, and they came to the Red Sea, as you know, and he gathered everybody around, and they had a little focus group. He said, "We've got this plan that we worked out. We're going to run down this hill, and when we get there, the water's going to open, and we're going to run through. And the Pharaoh's troops, which you can see that cloud of dust over there, that's them. They're going to chase us down, and when they get down in the middle of that, the Red Sea is going to close over, and then we'll go happily home to the promised land." Any questions or comments? And you all know that the PR man in the back row jumped up and said, "Right on, Mo, baby, you pull this one off, I'll get you 2 pages in the Old Testament." Now let's examine some of the aspects of that and what it tells maybe about our credibility today. First of all, I think we have to look at the semantics. I'm not sure that we are well enough accepted in this world yet, even to use those two initials, PR. I have a feeling that for a while, maybe we ought to talk about public relations and spell it out in full. Because those that are doing us in always talk about PRing it, and they use the initials in a way that I really think we ought to avoid. But also notice that in the story, it's a PR man. If you know anything about the makeup of this field, and certainly if you've been involved in education at all, you know that perhaps by 1990, public relations may in fact be listed as a feminine profession. We are one of the few fields in which women have not been restricted, and about 70% of our PRFSA students are in fact women. But there's something even more than that that tells, I think, about our profession. In this story, of course, Moses was terribly concerned about winning. He was absolutely going to do in his enemies in this case so that they didn't even exist anymore. This has been a view that we've had in public relations for a long time. We put together campaigns that win. I suggest to you that there are no victories in public relations and that we have to stop thinking about the victory syndrome. Because to me, if I understand public relations, what we do is to bring people who may disagree violently on subjects together to find a common ground. Not that one side wins over another side. In fact, a victory in public relations, in my book, is a defeat. The only victory is in bringing the sides together to some kind of an accommodated consensus. Last but not least, because this is one of my hobby horses, I think we have to clean up our semantics on even such basic things as what we call the institutions in which we work, particularly those of us that are counselors. Suddenly, the word agency has taken over. Everybody works for a PR agency, not me. Because I stopped to think about who works for agencies. Real estate agencies, insurance agencies, advertising agencies. People that sell somebody else's product and get a commission. I hope not to be a commission salesman, but rather to be a professional. And professionals work in firms like law firms and accounting firms.
And yet in such a minor thing, we've allowed our semantics to be sloppy. I don't think we're going to win public consent for our cause unless we tighten up on some of those types of situations. There's another thing about the story, however, and that is that it's ancient history in many ways, more ways than one, I guess I should say, without meaning to pun. First of all, what we do today is not primarily publicity. Also, I'm not sure that that one would get past our critics today. I think they might start asking some questions in the media about how Moses pulled that off, and I'm not sure he could have said much except no comment. Or he would have attributed it to one of those unidentified sources, you know. Recent studies done by a newsletter I publish and by PRSA itself show that about a third of our practitioners never write, place, supervise, or have anything to do with publicity, and never, except in perhaps rare instances, concentrate their time on working with the mass news media. We are moving away from that simply because there are so many other things for us to do and so many other skills that we need to have. In fact, we did a study about 2 years ago, and we identified 44 very specialized areas that public relations practitioners, if they want to call themselves generalists, have to know. And publicity was only one of those 44. This should not surprise us that we move away from publicity. First of all, the news media today are not very good communications vehicles. I think most of us would agree with that. They don't tell it like it is. They've got some pretty serious problems of their own, and the public doesn't believe them or trust them. Trust them very little, in fact. And their ability to affect people's attitudes and even opinions have been shown in most of the recent studies to be peripheral. I think some of us have got to look at those studies carefully, because we still think if you put the word out in the news media, you've got it out. The evidence is far to the contrary, but that's not the topic today. The point is that we are increasingly into counseling rather than communication, and I don't see how we could be anything else, because I hate to see a communication that was not the result of some rather serious research and counseling. Furthermore, what we do after the communication is becoming increasingly serious. More and more, I'm finding, maybe you are too, that I tell my clients, don't communicate. Please do not add to the pollution of the communication channels this worthless, repetitive material that you want to put out yet one more time. I think all of us are going to have to start thinking in those terms, because we know the little bit of time that the public has to deal with what we do put out. And certainly you've all heard the horror stories from the news media, those of you that deal with them, about the news releases that they get and what happens to them. However, there's another aspect of what we do which makes this story even more ancient history, and that is that increasingly we are dealing in what I call personal media, as opposed to the impersonal media of films, print, television. We're dealing again on the one-on-one, because we're finding that that's where many decisions can be made, and that's where accommodations can occur. And I suggest to you that our skills in one-on-one are not maybe what they ought to be. Nonetheless, that is what we're doing, and it makes the Moses story that much more ancient history. Well, the story that I promised Ralph I would tell makes another point, and that's the famous Reader's Digest story. I don't know whether this is another one you've all heard, but it concerns a publicist for the National Wildlife Association that wanted to place a story in the Reader's Digest, and so we wrote the item and he sent it in, and it was titled The Bear. Nice nature story, the kind of thing the Digest is apt to use. And he got a call back from the editor who said, that's kind of interesting, but, you know, can you add some more elements? I mean, can you get a first-person twist to the story? So he rewrote the story and submitted it as The Bear and Me. Well, he got another phone call, and this time the editor said, well, I think you're getting there. I think you're getting there, but, you know, the Digest, we have a worldwide readership of many millions, and we like to pack a lot into each story. So, can you get some love or a sex angle into it? Well, the publicist thought a minute. He didn't know quite how he could make this relevant to his client, but he did want to place that story, so he resubmitted an item called I Kissed the Bear. And he figured now he was all set. He was sure to get this place. But no, the phone rang, and it was the editor of Reader's Digest said, "I really like your story. I want to assure you I like this story, but my editor thinks we ought to tuck in a couple more items. And so, could you get it maybe into a how-to format?" Well, that was easy, because he simply retitled the story, you know, "How to Kiss a Bear." See? Well, the editor called back and says, "You've left out the personal touch again." And that was easy, because then it became "How I Kissed a Bear." Now he's all set and absolutely certainly has a placement made. But of course, you know how these jokes go. He didn't have a placement made. In fact, the editor said, "I think I can run this in the April issue. If you can just get a little bit of foreign element into, you know, overseas travel. People like that sort of thing." Well, he thought about that and thought about that, and then, you know, his publicist will have happened. The lightning struck, and so he sent back a story titled "How I Kissed a Russian Bear." And the phone rang again, to his great dismay, and this time the editor said, "I really think we're going to make it now, but I just need an element of mystery and intrigue." Well, that one took him about 3 weeks, but he came up with it. You know, publicists, they're very creative people. So what went back was a story called "How I Kissed a Russian Bear for the FBI." And our publicist went out to the press club early and had a few drinks, was secure that he had licked the problem, and he got back the next morning, and there was a call on his desk that he should buzz the editor at Reader's Digest. This time it's the editor himself, and he says, "You've done marvelous work with our junior editors, and I'm now on this story myself." And he said, "I think it's very good," but he said, "We do have one rule at the Reader's Digest. We don't ever like to run anything that doesn't have a religious angle. Could you work in religion? If you can, I'll run your article." Well, that was really a stumper, but again, the lightning struck. And in the April issue last year ran this marvelous story titled "How I Kissed a Russian Bear for the FBI and Found God." See, Ralph, I told you it was halfway through the story. I think the moral of that one for us is, are we trying to be all things to all people in public relations today? And I think the answer is yes. And I think the answer ought to be yes, because to me, this epitomizes what this field is all about. I have a view of the field that you may not share, but I'd just like to talk about it for a couple of minutes. I believe that in the last decade, many of the things we were asking for, almost pleading for, have suddenly occurred. We are taken increasingly seriously by our clients, by employers, even by the Wall Street Journal this last week, which has to be some kind of a breakthrough of the first magnitude. And I believe that American society has changed in a way that our importance in that society is now very emphatic. I believe that the court of public opinion is operating today as it has never operated before. Furthermore, I believe that the American people understand this court of public opinion because the major sociological trend in this country, in fact, in the whole world, is the desire of people to want to have a voice in decisions that affect their lives. Well, the only way you can do that is to have a court of public opinion. And unless I misunderstand the system, it is we who are the attorneys in the court of public opinion. It is, in fact, the public relations professionals of this world that make it possible for that court to function, particularly in the mass society we have, the 220 million people. We are the ones that put forth the ideas which can then conflict and contend within the court of public opinion, which enables the average person to make or have a share in the decisions that affect his or her life. I can't think of a more important function in a democratic, pluralistic society, but I don't think we've gotten that across at all to the public. I think even our definitions of public relations have fallen a little bit behind where we really are. I have a definition that some of you are familiar with, and I'll bore those of you that are by repeating it once again. I believe that public relations is the attempt, now emphasize that word attempt, it's not a sure thing, but it is an attempt to solve problems or create opportunities by applying what we know of human nature. Human nature, those are the key words. When you look at all the professions, you say, what do they do in brass tacks? I think what we do is to know and understand human nature and the civilized cultures that humans put together. And that we ought to be the ones, therefore, that see that the work of this world that is done by our clients and employers never fails to take account of that human nature. And yet we've been operating on such a logical model for so long. We ourselves put together logical public relations programs. To me, that is very defeatist, because people are not logical. People surely use their head, but they use their hearts and their guts far more. And so I believe that this court of public opinion, which is human nature personified in the mass, has practicing in it a group of professionals, us, that need to know a great, great deal about human nature. And I think that's what conferences like this are for, so that we can improve our skills. I was interested at the PRSA conference in St. Louis. Some of you may have attended it. The president of the International Public Relations Association, a man named Sanat Lahiri from India, was there and gave a speech that pleased me a great deal. I just want to quote one thing that he said. This is a man that has spent a year now traveling throughout the world talking to public relations professionals everywhere. That's what the IPRA president essentially does. This is what Mr. Lahiri said. The real job of public relations is to reach and touch the minds and hearts of human beings. And to do that, you have to be far more than a public relations technician. You have to be a public relations humanist. I guess he and I are in agreement on what public relations is all about, and I hope if you haven't thought of it that way before, that you may do so in future. See whether you agree with me or disagree with me, but at least try it on for size. Now we face another job. We must tell the public what it is we do, so they will give us consent to be a profession. To illustrate where we are now, I will share with you what I consider to be Ralph Reedy's best story, and maybe he's already told it to all of you in his district, so I don't expect you to laugh again, but it's the one about the three men that are stranded on the desert island. One of them is a preacher, one of them is a lawyer, and one of them, of course, is a public relations professional. And you know, these things always happen at night. And so they're swimming, they're stranded on this island, and as the mists rise in the morning, they look off in the distance, and they see what they think is land. But how are they going to get there? Well, they decide they'll have to draw straws and swim for it, and you know how these stories go. Naturally, the public relations professional loses, gets the short straw, and trips down, prepares to plunge in. And the minister says, wait, I think we ought to have a moment of prayer. So the minister does his thing, and the PR professional strips the rest of the way down, plunges into the water, off towards safety on the horizon. And just at that moment, a school of sharks swims into that area. And the two men on the island are disconsolate. They see that their hopes of survival are dashed. And all of a sudden, the sharks line up on either side of that swimmer and escort him to safety. And the minister says, hallelujah, brother, that proves the power of prayer. And the lawyer says, no, Reverend, we call that professional courtesy. That's a greedy story. If you don't like it, I think that we can do something about that kind of an attitude towards our profession. In fact, I think you're doing a lot of it right here at a conference like this. But I think we first have to analyze what it is to be a profession. I like to use the definition that Edward L. Bernays has coined. He says that a profession is an art applied to a science in a way that the public interest comes before the individual gain of the practitioner. I think we have all of those elements. We certainly have the art. Lord knows we have the body of knowledge, the science. And if you believe in the court of public opinion, merely to practice public relations is to be acting in the public interest. Because no matter what ideas you are putting forth, you are enabling that system to function. Now compare this professional possibility that we have, this participation in an absolutely essential aspect of human life, because after all, as soon as there were Adam and Eve, there was the problem of human relationships, of reputation, and all the things that we deal with. Compare that with some of our supposedly sister disciplines. For example, advertising. Advertising could not be a profession because it does not meet the criteria. Many of us, many of the people on this earth, will live their whole lives and never participate in the placing of an ad. Many of them will live in parts of the world where they don't even use advertising as consumers or for information sources. And yet those very people, simply by being in human societies, have public relationships. Or consider marketing. The marketing people always tell us, you know, that they really do what we do, or the way they always say it is that we do what they do. But stop to think for a minute. If you're marketing these, and you've got 5,000 of them to sell, you don't really care which 5,000 people buy them. The whole world is your oyster as long as you can convince 5,000 somewhere to buy one. Now think about public relations. When my client has a strike, those 2,300 employees are the ones I have to deal with. I can't find any 2,300 people out there to convince. I have to work on that specific, limited audience. And how much more difficult and professional one must be to work within those kinds of limits. Or consider what the lobbyists told us yesterday. There are 435 people in Congress. Those are the ones you have to convince. You can't replace them with other folks, yet marketing can do that. So I suggest to you that the umbrella for all of these activities is what we do. That public relations is the umbrella, and the public relationships that result from the policies and the activities that we participate in house underneath them advertising, communications, marketing, and many other functions. Now, if we could get that across to the public, I am convinced the public would see how we are acting, therefore very much in their interests and in concert with their desire to make decisions which affect their lives. There are a number of things that I believe we are going to have to do to make ourselves more worthy of this public consent to our professionalism. But I want to tell you about a couple of things that have already happened. Again, at our conference in St. Louis, some of you may have heard Joe Awad from Reynolds Metal, who incidentally is going to be the chairman of our 1980 conference in Atlanta. Joe gave a talk which he traced a little bit of the history of public relations activities within his company and told how about a year ago, suddenly something dawned on him. For years he'd been talking about management this and management that, and he said one morning he woke up and he realized, hey, he said, we are management. I suggest that that is the case and is one of those things we were talking about 10 years ago, which has now happened. Another prominent practitioner by the name of Joe Nolan, who is now with Monsanto Chemical and before that was with Citibank, wrote an article recently for the New York chapter's newsletter. It was Joe's chef d'oeuvre, his distillation of what he has learned in many years of practice to share with the rest of us. And the title of it was, Don't Wait to Be Asked. Joe went on to point out that no, you won't be the resident futurist, the issues anticipator in your organization if you wait to be asked. But if you plunge ahead and learn those skills and start serving your management with them, you'll be it. And he traced through a number of other cases where in fact we are professional, have the capabilities, and can't sit back and wait to be asked. Well, I have a view of public relations in the world, perhaps because of my particular type of practice, that I think might become infectious. I'd like to try and give you all the germ anyway. I see a world in which the things that we practice, the skills that we have, are the most needed skills by 10 times over that there are today. I was at a meeting with the president and some of his cabinet members on behalf of PRSA about 2 weeks ago, he kept reminding those of us in attendance that 800 million people in this world go to bed hungry every night. Then he started talking about our own energy situation and about the other areas where we are in tremendous conflict. And that just reinforced to me again what I'm reading in the papers and seeing on television, and that is that if we can learn to bring about accommodation between contending groups in the court of public opinion, it may very well be those of us in this room and those who are our fellow members in PRSS that can bring about a better future, not just for us, but for all of mankind. PRSA this year is launched on a major effort to help you, to help all of us make that happen. Will we make some mistakes along the way in trying to get to this bright future? I'm sure we will. And that reminds me of Cal Druck's favorite story, which I think you've all heard, certainly all of you in Tulsa must have heard it. Cal, as you know, is our professional development committee chairman doing yeoman work for us. Cal likes to tell another story about Moses, who he says is the most honored person in the history of mankind, and he likes to tell about the fact that even he made this horrible mistake, and you all know the story, you know, when he was leading the children of Israel out of Egypt to the promised land, he made a mistake, and he turned left and found the promised land, and as you know, if he had turned right, he would have had the oil. Whether we get to the promised land or find oil, I believe there are two things that are assured in the future of public relations. One of them is simply endemic in the nature of human society, and that is that the only things that are certain are death, taxes, and change. And as long as change is a certainty, there's going to be plenty of work for us, because that change is going to cause conflict and discontent and readjustment, and those are the things that we practice. A French philosopher sums up, I guess, my message perhaps best. In 1964, just at the beginning of the information and knowledge explosion, this philosopher said, "Up until now, our problems were ones of nature. Henceforth, our problems will be ones of human nature." I think we, as the human nature experts, can make a change in this world. And I think we can start right here in PRSA. Thank you.